which is doing inquiries on Eskom, our entity, the Committee of Public Enterprises. We are going to start with the inquiry. As I have said before, we have a witness that is going, told that she is going to take an oath. Cameras are not going to show her face. Whether you have a phone that can zoom a person from 100 meters again, you are not allowed by the rules of parliament to do that. And if you insist in doing that, we are going to charge you as per the rules of parliament. So please refrain from that. Even if you want to do it secretly, we might see you taking a picture secretly. So please do not do that. We have Ms. Bianca Godson amongst us, who's going to give us, who's going to be our witness. She's going to be led by the evidence leader as usual. Ms. Bianca, I am told that you are going to take an oath. Therefore, I want to read the oath to you. At the end, you will raise your hand and say, "So help me God," and you will sign the oath that is in front of you. The oath stands like this. In accordance with Section 16 of Powers and Privileges and Immunities of Parliament and Provincial Legislature Act 2004, as a witness to this oversight inquiry, please be informed that by law, you are required to answer fully and satisfactorily all the questions lawfully put to you, or to produce any document that you are required to produce in connection with the subject matter of the inquiry, notwithstanding the fact that the answer or the document could incriminate you or expose you to criminal or civil proceedings or damages. You are, however, protected in that evidence given under oath or affirmation before a house or a committee may not be used against you in any court or place outside parliament, except in criminal proceedings concerning a charge of perjury or a charge relating to the evidence or documents required in these proceedings. Please be aware that in terms of Section 17, Subsection 2 of the Powers, Privileges and Immunities of Parliament and Provincial Legislature Act, a person who willfully vanishes a house or a committee with information or makes a statement before it which is false or misleading commits an offence and is liable to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 2 years. You are required, therefore, to take an oath that the evidence that you are about to give us is truthful. May you, which one do you prefer? Therefore, you'll say, "I swear that the evidence I shall give shall be the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth, and so help me God," and you'll raise your right hand.
"I swear that the evidence I shall give shall be the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help me God."
Thank you very much. You sign the paper in front of you. Honorable members, now I will give time to the evidence leader to lead us, then we will ask questions as usual after he has interacted with the witness. Thank you very much. Over to you, evidence leader.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to yourself, the honorable members, your guests, and colleagues. Ms. Goodson, if you can just bring the mic when you respond closer to you so that it can be recorded, whatever you say. Can you, for the record, just state your full particulars?
Good morning, everybody. My name is Bianca Cherise Goodson. I'm sorry, what other particulars? Please forgive me, I'm a bit nervous. What other particulars would you like?
That's enough. Please relax.
Okay.
Yes. Can you give the committee your academic background and your short working experience?
Formally, I've got an honours degree in physical science, which I obtained from the University of Natal, Pietermaritzburg. Shortly after I got my degree, I started working in the mining industry for a company in Stellenbosch called ISS. I was effectively a seismologist. Straight after that, I went into management consulting, moved up to Johannesburg. Management consulting, but still practicing in the space of mining, so that was in a company. I moved up for Accenture, went to another company called Size Corporation. After that, worked for Wally Parsons, was headhunted to go.
Miss Bianca, could you please speak through the mic?
Sorry.
Because we can't hear you.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Is that okay? So eventually worked at Anglo American, still in the mining space. While I was at Anglo American, I was approached by Trillium to join them. Since then, I worked for Sage, and now I'm employed at Signia.
The committee has called you as a witness to help it understand some corporate governance issues at ESCOM. You were a CEO at Trillium Management Consulting. Is that correct?
Correct.
Can you take the committee through as to how you got to be associated with the company? What role did you play in the company, and for how long you stayed with the company?
Okay. In 2015, so in the last quarter of 2015, I was approached by a gentleman by the name of Clive Angel. He approached me because we had mutual acquaintances. He approached me because they were starting up this financial advisory organization. One subsidiary would be a management consulting company, and particularly they were looking for a CEO to head that. I did have quite a bit of experience in management consulting, so my number was passed on to Clive. So that is how I was initially introduced, but to Trillium, but also through to Integrated Capital. So that was in about October, November 2015. When I met with Clive and he explained to me what the intention was for the organization at the time, it sounded really exciting. It sounded really cool, to be honest, because the intention of the organization was to improve efficiencies within our state-owned entities. And being proudly South African, I was like, wow, if I can help, and if I can lead a team that will do that, I was grateful for the opportunity. So I was working at Anglo American at the time. I resigned. I formally started working as the CEO of Trillium Management Consulting on the 1st of January 2016. I resigned on the 19th of March 2016, but my last day as an employee of Trillium was on the 25th of April 2016. So my tenure was quite short. It was 4 months formally. However, I was a director for the organization, I think, from November 2015. So that was my role. What I understood my role to be at the time was that I was brought on to build the capacity and the capability of the management consulting division. I was informed very early on that work was secured, so my function would not be to sell work and to go and find work, but it would be to be able to build up the human capital and the expertise and the IP within the organization to fulfill that work. That is what I understood my role to be.
You made a statement during this year, I don't know exactly at what stage, which you indicated in it that you intended it to submit to the committee, this committee. And you have furnished us with that statement. And I've checked with you, the statement is in front of you. And I can confirm that in front of the members, there is your statement together with the annexures.
Correct, that's my statement. And I published it on the 27th of September of this year.
And that statement is not signed.
It is, actually. It just, I think when it went into the website, you don't see my initials on each page. But it is signed.
Okay. The one that I have is not signed, but that's no transmesh. Later on, if you can just furnish the committee with a signed version. But it is that...
Sorry. In our last page, of there's a signature. I'm not sure whose signature it is, but there's a signature on the last page. Whose signature is this one?
No, that's something different, ma'am. It's an annexure. Yes. We're going to spend some time traversing through your statement. And my job is just to assist you to go through your statement. But I understand that from the statement, having read the statement, you make the point that this statement should not be intended to be covering everything you know about Trillian and the issues discussed herein. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. If you don't mind, could I maybe just tell you a bit about my history in terms of disclosing? As I mentioned, my last day at Trillian was on the 25th of April, and I decided that very shortly after, I made a decision, a personal decision, that should anybody require this information towards any program to state capture, I'd make it available. It was a personal decision, and that wasn't public. The first opportunity for me to assist in an inquiry or an investigation into state capture was with Tuli Madonsela's team at the time, when she was compiling the report, State of Capture. She approached me in September 2016, and she asked me if I would provide information to her investigative team, which I did. And for that specific instance, I did compile a statement. The issue, though, and please, Chair, forgive my what may appear to be ignorance in this regard, but I believe that I was a spoke in a very big wheel, and I don't exactly know what the wheel was doing, but I do know what the spoke was doing. So I have this information, and I had I made a copy of my computer from Trillian. And I don't always know what's useful. I suspect what may be useful. And my suspicions are directed a lot by what's actually in the public domain. So I compiled that statement for the Public Protectors team based on my view of what I thought would be valuable information, which was limited. So there was that disclosure. Later, I supported Jeff Budlender, and that was in about February of 2017. And that was slightly easier to support him with valuable information because he was very specific in terms of, do you have information in this regard? And I spent a lot of time with him, and it was a lot more informal. So the information that I supported Jeff with was targeted for the scope of what he was looking for. Since then, there's been a lot of information that's been in the public domain through articles, investigative journalists, Gupta leaks. And suddenly I realized, oh my gosh, okay, this one email and that one meeting, is that how... Suddenly somebody has more significance in hindsight than what they did at the time when I met them. So I compiled this statement that we have now. And it's also somewhat different, and it's different in the sense that it's still same pertinent information, but it's informed a lot more by what has been in the public domain. So I think what's really key is that what I submitted for the public protector What I submitted to Jeff and what I've compiled here in no way is comprehensive. My intention is in no way to hold back information or to not fully disclose everything. It's just difficult for me to always know what is appropriate. So today I'm really optimistic that through the questions that I would receive, I would divulge all the information that's pertinent to this specific inquiry, to this committee. But failing that, I would have to use my own judgment, and I don't know if I can even trust my judgment in terms of what's good or not.
Now, thanks for that offer. I'm sure the committee would gladly take the offer. You, a CEO, and in the introductory meeting you had with Mr. Angel, you told that you're not going to focus on bringing work to the company, which I found a bit strange. I thought a CEO's job was, amongst others, to grow the company's business. Why was that the case? Do you know?
I don't know categorically, but I can tell you what I was thinking at the time. What became apparent to me, and this is in hindsight, and was not at the time when I had the discussion with the client, later on he shared information with me that made it clear that the forming of Trillion, and especially the work at Eskom, had started long before I got there. So I've got certain annexures and documentation from Eskom meetings, minutes of negotiations between McKinsey and Eskom on the top engineers program. They suggest that the negotiations had started from about June 2015. That's the information that I have. So by the time I had this conversation with Clive, it was quite apparent that like I referenced the wheel had already started turning. Maybe naive on my side, I didn't ask the questions enough, but I got the sense that stuff had already been done. And in this specific instance, in relation to the work that we were doing at Eskom, I got in a bit late in the process, if I can call it that, and work had already been secured to an extent. When I say secured to an extent, I refer specifically to a document that Clive shared with me, which had a table. It was minutes of one of the meetings as part of my annexures. I don't know the exact annexure ID, but I can find it. That had a table at the bottom that referenced 475 million rand down payments. From my very humble beginnings, I honestly thought that was the revenue for the entire duration of the work. I didn't realize it was only a down payment for 6 months at the time. So it is quite apparent to me that work had been secured. I didn't think it was strange on the basis that I felt that I had come in late in the process. I think ordinarily, if it was a startup, starting everything from scratch, there would be an expectation of you've got to actually start getting your business development and you've got to start building your pipeline.
On page 4 of your statement, I think it's pages 4 until page 13 of your statement, you deal with people at Trillion. And maybe just through your statement, take us through the individuals that you are dealing with at Trillion, and by way of introducing some of the subject matters that you dealt with.
Okay. If it's okay with you, I'm going to go sequentially as it appears in my statement. So starting off, section 3.1, and it's not necessarily individuals, but it's an organization called Integrated Capital Management. My very first introduction to Trillion was through an organization called Integrated Capital Management. And the individual particularly was Mr. Clive Angel. Obviously, when I met Clive for the first time, and I Googled him, right? Before you meet somebody, you go onto the internet and you read their LinkedIn profile and you do all that stuff in preparation for a meeting. And I found all this information about him, and none of it referenced Trillion. It all referenced integrated capital management. So in my first meeting with him, which was also in the integrated capital management offices, the question that I did ask is, well, what's the association? And that's when he told me that integrated capital management was an company, it was a very small company, that was tasked with effectively building or establishing Trillium. So the IPO, I pretended that I even knew what the acronym was, but I had to Google it later, and I think the acronym stands for initial public offering. So I was like, okay, fine. So in my mind, Trillium is being built on the one side, and integrated capital management is this conduit that is effectively building this new entity that's going to come about. I wanted to understand more about integrated before I understood about Trillium. And Clive explained to me that the company consisted predominantly of three individuals, being himself as a director for the organization. He was taking the lead from ICM in building Trillium. But in addition to Clive, there was also a gentleman by the name of Mark Chipkin, who was also a director. And there was another director, and his name was Stanley Shan. They worked together, and they worked very closely together. But in this specific instance, Clive was somewhat leading when it came to the Trillium basis. So I think that covers overall integrated capital management. When I decided to accept the offer to work for Trillium, my employment contract was signed by Clive. So my understanding at that point was that Clive was effectively my boss or my direct manager, which meant that, again, even my operational relationship in Trillium was through integrated capital management. I'm going to move on to Clive, which is number 3.2. So I think I've explained integrated capital management. If not, please let me know if there's any other questions. But moving specifically on to Clive, so my relationship during my tenure at Trillium was particularly with Clive. Unlike, you know, some of the employees that came over from Trillium later, from Regiments Capital later, where they had a relationship with Eric Wood and their reporting line was Eric Wood, I was a particular anomaly because my relationship was through integrated capital. I'd been headhunted. I hadn't transferred. So everything that I did while I was at Trillium was through Clive. I would get instructions from Clive. I would get expectations in terms of my performance from Clive. I would get told when I wasn't doing something correct from Clive. I spoke to him numerous times a day. We were on WhatsApp. We were on email. My relationship with him was quite very operational. Okay. And that's why you'll see the more we speak about this, there's a lot of reference from my side from him. I'm going to move on to Stanley Shan. As I mentioned earlier, Stanley Shan was the director at Integrated Capital. Later, I found out that he was also a director of Transnet. I don't know exactly what committee he sat on or what he did, but he was also quite influential in Transnet. With that said, Stanley was also quite operational in Trillium once Trillium had actually formed a bit more. He was in our management committee meetings. He was one of the people that phoned me to try and talk to me after I resigned. So he was quite active in Trillium. I'm going to move on to 3.4, who is Salim Issa. So I have a relationship with Clive, and because I decided that I was going to take on the position, Clive then he proceeded to explain the shareholding and the structure of what Trillium would be like from an organization perspective. Clive explained to me that there was a holding company called Trillium Capital Partners. Trillium Capital Partners would have numerous subsidiary companies. The subsidiary companies were Trillium Management Consulting, of which I was the CEO, Trillium Financial Advisory, of which Ms. Mopeza was the CEO, Trillium Securities, of which Daniel Roy was the CEO. Trillium Securities did not have a CEO. Eric Wood was acting as the CEO. Then there was Trillion Asset Management, of which Daniel Roy was CEO. And in the very early days, we had Trillium Properties, which Clive explained to me Mark Pimenski was the CEO of. Clive then proceeded to explain that we had a boss, and that boss was Salim Essa. He was the majority shareholder, which made Trillion fully BEE, black-owned organization. Salim owned 60% of the business.
The organogram of Trillion Capital Partners is that the organogram in Annex C of your statement, which is on page 27 of your statement, is that correct?
Correct.
You may proceed. I'm sorry for interrupting you.
Thank you. Thank you. So so the shareholding of Trillion Capital Partners was explained to me, of which Salim Issa was a 60% shareholder. Clive also explained to me that Salim was somewhat operational in the sense that Salim was very involved in the business. He wasn't one of those shareholders that sort of just left it to the CEOs. He would help get us business. Clive made it clear that the relationships that our major shareholder had enabled many opportunities, and Salim was the boss, and Salim made the final decisions. If there were any important decisions that were not so much operational that needed to be made, Salim was the person that it would go to. Integrated Capital, specifically Clive, was the conduit to Salim. So whenever I would ask Clive questions in terms of what do I do in certain instances, he would say, let me speak to the boss, I'll get back to you. The boss was Salim Issa. Moving on to 3.5, which is Eric Wood. Eric Wood, I met quite early in my introduction to Trillion. Eric, in the sense that Eric was, he interviewed me, if I can call it that. The first time I met Clive, I met Eric Wood as well as Mohammed Balbat, and that was part of my interview process. I thought it was weird. I didn't ask questions until later, and I obviously asked Clive, okay, well, why do I need to meet these people? And Clive explained to me that Eric would be joining Trillion later. So I met Eric in 2015 still. He explained to me that Eric was associated with Regiments Capital and that the company would be dissolving or breaking up, and when it does, Eric would be joining. Eric would be joining Trillion later. But initially, that was the extent of it. So I met him once, at most twice in 2015, and then again I saw him a little bit more in 2016. So Eric came over to Trillion with quite a few people that transferred from Regiments to Trillion. He became the CEO of Trillion Capital Partners on the 1st of March 2016, and had a relationship with many of the employees, or fair to say all the employees that had transferred from Regiments. I didn't have that relationship with him though. Up until the 1st of March 2016, Eric was involved in Trillion and the decisions that would be made in Trillion, but not so actively. Clive was very active. After the 1st of March, Eric had an office with us and was involved a lot more in the day-to-day decisions and the day-to-day operations, but prior to the 1st of March, not so much because he was still based in Regiments. I'm going to move on to 3.6, which is Mark Pimenski. I met Mark Pimenski formally at the offices of Integrated Capital in late 2015. He was very often there, and so whenever I would go and speak to Clive, he would be sort of hovering around in the courtyard. I never really understood where he was until we had a senior management meeting in Trillion. In early 2016, where I was told that he would be the CEO of the properties division. I've got a very bad habit, and I'm a smoker, and Mark Pimenski is a smoker as well, and we would very often go to the smoking section and we'd talk about what did we do over the weekends. And that was one of the times when he had his CV with me and he asked me to review his CV, and I asked him why, and he said he was applying for a board position. I didn't ask him more details than that, but I sat there with a pen and basically started, you know, making changes to his CV. And all I knew is that he was a property specialist, and that was it. That was in the very early stages of 2016, so it was by January, February. Shortly after that, Mark left, and I never saw him much, but we shared offices, right? So we were always in the same building. For the one senior management meeting that we had in those first 2 months, he was there, but then he did leave after that.
Sorry. Mr. Pamensky, were you aware at the time that he had previously served in the Eskom board?
No. So I probably should read the news more often, or should have back then. But I did know that he, from what I know right now, it became apparent to me when articles broke about him. I'm sure that somebody could have mentioned it to me at the time, but right now I can't remember the specifics about when I did realize that. But I do know that when articles broke about him being on the Eskom board, it resonated quite a lot with me. And I was shocked. We had one board member from Transnet on the one side and another board member from Eskom, and it was like, yeah, and he was the CEO of our properties division that was looking after Transnet property portfolio. So, it was a bit weird.
Let's move to 3.7.
Okay. Mr. Ashok Narai, please forgive me if I struggle to pronounce Mr. Ashok's surname. Mr. Ashok, I met at most twice. One very significant incident was... one significant one is where the directors of a company called Cutting Edge accused me of not acting fast enough to get payment from Eskom, and they were quite upset with me. And to get this whole issue or this misunderstanding mitigated, we needed a mediator. It appeared, and the mediator was a shock. So there was this urgent meeting that was called at Integrated Capital's offices with these two directors. The directors were Anto Shobi and Alta Emily. And Clive was there. Clive didn't tell me what the meeting was about. I walked into the meeting. Ashok was there, and Ashok basically acted as the mediator between the misunderstanding. Salim also was there. So in the meeting was myself, Clive, Salim, Ashok, Alta, and Santosh, and we were speaking about the expected payments from Eskom for the procurement work on the Top Engineers program. And I didn't think much of a shock at the time. It was one of the first times that I'd met him. However, after my resignation, there was an article about, Amit Bungawi wrote an article about the Harmix letterbox company, and they had this infographic of how money was moving between the organizations, and in the middle of this infographic was a picture of a shock. And it made me so concerned. So I didn't think anything significant about a shock that day when we had that this issue with Cutting Edge. Until I saw that article in hindsight, this is one of those examples where it wasn't initially in the public protector's statement because the article hadn't broken. I didn't think there was anything significant about this gentleman. And then Trillium had another subcontractor called eGateway. eGateway also was very, they wanted to know when are we going to get paid. And they believed me when I told them. It was like, I don't know. I don't know what's going on in terms of invoicing processes. I don't know. And they would say, okay, fine, we're going to go sort it out. And they would just go upstairs to Salim's office. And when Ashok was, from what I understand from the PA, when Ashok was in South Africa, he would be in Salim's office. Salim's office was literally one office on top of Integrated Capital's office in the Melrose building. And they would go to him, they'd come back down, and they'd be like, okay, we're fine. We'll see you the next time we come to South Africa.
3.8.
Hamza Faruqi I met for the first time when I met Gary Peter, and that was in January. We went for dinner with Gary Peter. Eric had arranged the dinner with the Oliver Wyman directors, and Hamza was there. And I didn't quite understand it. The next day, I spent the day with the Oliver Wyman directors, and I asked them, what is this? Do they know the significance? Because they appear to have quite a reasonable relationship with Hamza. And they just made a they said to me that they had met Hamza in Dubai, that because of the relationship with Hamza, they'd met Salim, and obviously, you know, this is why we're having the meetings that we're having now, so that was the connection. The significance of Hamza as well is that Hamza has a brother. His brother's name is Saadi Faruqi. Every single time I met with the directors of eGateway, Saadi was there all the time. I introduced myself to Saadi and my role as TMC CEO, and everyone goes around the room, Saadi would say, okay, yeah, I'm the driver. And there was no, again, there was no significance to me between these two gentlemen, because I didn't know what they did, and they could have honestly just been drivers and just, I don't know why they were there. But when the article broke later on in the year about the bank that Salim Issa was trying to buy with Hamza Faruqi, again, I started getting sight of how this big wheel was turning, and it disturbed me significantly, and that's why this specific section is in my statement. Santosh Chobi. Santosh Chobi, who is the director of a company called Cutting Edge. Cutting Edge Commerce was the organization or the subcontracting company that basically looked after the procurement work stream for the Eskom turnaround program. When I queried why we had to use the subcontracting company to do the work, Clive said to me that Salim had an interest in it, so we just have to work with them. So Santosh's significance to me was the fact that he was a director for Cutting Edge. Together with 3.10, which is Altaf Emily, Altaf Emily is also director for Cutting Edge. Whenever there were queries that related to the procurement components of the Top Engineers program, those were the two gentlemen that I always dealt with. Moving on to Javed Khan. That's 3.11. Javed Khan is the director for a company called eGateway. My understanding is that eGateway had two branches or presence, one in Dubai, the other one in India. Javed particularly was based in Dubai, and the significance of eGateway was that they were the preferred supplier of resources for the generation workstream on Top Engineers. So whenever there were queries or operational issues or decisions to be taken on the generation workstream, Javed was my contact. Initially, that's how it started. However, as the relationship progressed, it turned out that eGateway would also be involved quite closely with the Duver, I think I'm saying this correctly, the Duver project, the replacement of the boilers, got a formal name, Duver Boiler 3 or something. Javed discussed and negotiated quite significantly when it came to the Duver project as well. Moving on to Atul. Atul I've met a few times. Atul was introduced to me also as a director for eGateway. 3.13, Tebogo Lebalo. Tebogo Lebalo I met in 2015 at Regiment. He introduced himself to me as the CFO of Trillion Capital Partners. We worked quite closely together from 2015 up until the point of my departure from Trillion. Tebogo, my understanding of his role in the organization, Clive told me that money would never be managed at the subsidiary level, all cash flows, so all invoices, all payments received, anything associated with money at Trillion would not be managed at the subsidiary level, but would be managed centrally. Tebogo, being the CFO of the group, had more sight into invoices, payments, all that type of stuff. So Tebogo I worked with quite closely because the Trillion Management Consulting forecasted cash flow was quite significant, and my forecasting assumptions obviously fed into his budget quite significantly as well. So we worked very closely. I'm sure I'll explain him more later. Moving on to 3.14, Vikas Sagar. Vikas Sagar is probably the one person that I worked with more or had more interactions with than I did with Clive. Vikas Sagar is the director for McKinsey. He was based in the Johannesburg office. Vikas Sagar is my point of contact at McKinsey for anything related to the Top Engineers program at Eskom. We spoke multiple times. All information that I needed to understand on the scope of work, the assumptions on the work, the revenue of the work at Eskom, everything that I felt I needed, he was the person to give it to me. He introduced me to his team. We had meetings lots of the times. I met with him probably on two occasions at Salim's office in Melrose Arch. So he was quite significant in my operational dealings at Eskom. Moving on to 3.15, Bernard Hartman. Bernard Hartman is a director from Oliver Wyman in the Dubai branch. I met Bernard for the first time in January 2015, together with a colleague of his, Martin De Wet. I was introduced to him by Eric Wood when Eric was still at regiment, so we met in the regiment's office. The day that I met Bernard Hartman was the day that I met Gary Peter for the first time. During informal conversations, sorry, my bad habit of smoking, but I guess I speak to a lot of people when I do that. During those smoke breaks, during those smoke breaks, we just spoke, and obviously I'll ask the question, how did you all come to be here? And they had, what they told me was that Hamza had introduced him to Salim in Dubai. They had clearly some sort of arrangement that would bring them to South Africa. When they got to South Africa, it was Eric that would then execute against that arrangement. What subsequently executed was the dinner with Gary Peter, the meeting with the North Singh the next day, which I'll go into more detail about later, and then the meeting with Minister Van Rooyen later on the next day, the afternoon. So that was how they came to be there. They particularly were trying to showcase the capabilities of Oliver Wyman and how Oliver Wyman could also add to the efficiencies in South Africa's state-owned entities. Moving on to 3.16, which is Martin De Wet. Martin De Wet is just another director of Oliver Wyman Dubai with the same objective, with the same story in terms of how we had met, they were together. 3.17, Edwin Mabalane. I do not remember Edwin's formal title, but I can tell you how I met him. I was instructed to meet Coco Machela. I eventually had a meeting with Coco Machela about some issues, which I'm sure we will discuss later. And at that meeting with Coco Machela, he introduced me to Edwin Mabalane. He told me that for the issues that I had raised at that meeting, Edwin Mabalane would be the person to help me. Edwin Mabalane subsequently became my contact person with Eskom when I experienced issues with the Eskom Top Engineers program, or when I experienced issues with McKinsey, or when I was just simply instructed to do so. So when the e-gateway gentleman needed to discuss Duva, I was instructed to arrange a meeting with Edwin. So I worked quite closely with Edwin, in the sense that maybe through my tenure, I met him about four or five times. Coco Machela. I was instructed by Clive to establish a part of my job, part of my expected job as CEO of Trillion Management Consulting, was that I should develop relationships with my key stakeholders. And I need to nurture those relationships with my key stakeholders. And I was told that one such key stakeholder was Coco Machela. To open the door and enable such a relationship, the initial contact was made for me. So the initial contact was communicated to Clive, where Clive said, we've arranged for you to meet Coco after a certain press conference. The rest is up to you. So I met Coco. At the first meeting with Coco, he then said, okay, well, Edwin's your guy. You work with Edwin. I did understand that Coco was somebody who would support me if I encountered issues through working with McKinsey at Eskom.
Sorry. Just under 3.17 on page 11, you're making reference to annexure A, B in capital letters. What is the significance of that annexure? Well, what is the annexure about, without necessarily going to the annexure?
Okay. So that talks to my initial meeting. It's an email thread So it's quite a significant email thread. I think in total it's about 5 pages. And effectively what it shows is how this initial meeting was planned and scheduled. So I received a call from Clive, and I don't know the exact date, but it's around about February? Yeah. I received a call, and Clive said to me, you know, Coco Machela is one of your key stakeholders. It's been arranged that you should meet him, and you should meet him after a press conference. There was a press conference early in 2016 where the executive of Eskom were presenting the results or the stability of the grid and, you know, the maintenance schedules and that type of stuff. It was held at Megawatt Park. The arrangement that was made, that was communicated to me from Clive, was that Coco was expecting to see me straight after their press conference. So I went to Megawatt Park, attended the press conference. Straight after the press conference, went and introduced myself to Coco. The email thread, to an extent, talks about how Ms. Nolutando arranged for that. When I introduced myself to Coco after the press conference, Coco did say to me, we need to talk further. Please arrange to meet with me. So we picked up the thread. Jeanette Dallaray is Stanley Shane's PA, so she assisted in arranging the meeting, and that's effectively the significance of Annexure AB. This was where the meeting was established, and the meeting was eventually confirmed and held on the 10th of February.
Thank you. On page 12, having been introduced to Mr. Mabalane, on paragraph 3.17.5, you say, Edwin afforded me the opportunity to recommend changes to the SDNL annexures of the contract. What are you talking about here?
Okay. Is it okay if I just maybe give a bit more context to what led to that?
Yes.
Okay. So, when I started actively working with McKinsey, which was particularly in 2016, so from January, it was difficult. It was really difficult working with McKinsey because, well, one, at that time, Trillian had no people, right? It was me. My CIO joined shortly after, like I think in the first week of January, but effectively Trillian consisted of two people. McKinsey wanted to, you know, hit the ground running. They wanted to start the work. They already had teams going to Majuba Power Station. And yes, Trillian coming to say, we want to be part of it. We want to develop our people as well. So it was difficult because McKinsey would say, but that why are you trying to bring people in? Why do you want a one-to-one relationship between consultants? And it was hard. So there was one leadership meeting, particularly with McKinsey, where and I've ministered it as part of my lectures, where one of the very senior partners made very harsh remarks about, well, just take it 30% and go. I escalated that issue to Clive. And I just said to him, I said, this is impossible. How are these people supposed to be developing the IP and helping us develop as a company if they're not even prepared to listen? I noted that in quite a significant note and subsequently presented it back to Salim. Salim then said, okay, we're going to fix this. Because clearly the supply development understanding was going nowhere. And it was really my intent and my CEO's intent to build this company. That was sincerely, sincerely our intention. So I wrote this note. I sent it to Salim. Salim looked at me, just smiled, and he said, Bianca, don't worry, it's sorted. The next morning, Vika's phoned and Vika's apologized. But that started the ball rolling with the issues with the SDNL. By the time I met Coco, Coco had sight of that note that I gave to Salim. So that note was emailed to Clive, and it was printed and taken to the meeting that I had with Salim. So I don't know how Coco got it, but Coco got the note. And when I met with Coco on the 10th and he introduced me to Edwin, that was one of the agenda items of the fact that the relationship with McKinsey was just, it was not in any spirit of SDNL. And that's what led me to actually cry in front of Coco, because it was a relentless relationship with McKinsey. Coco said, don't worry about it. Do you have a view in terms of what could help? And I did have a view. I had a very strong view. There needed to be firm KPIs that actually said McKinsey had to help develop us. They had to make sure that we had people there. How else are you supposed to do skills transfer? Because it said to me, yeah, we can take you to the seminar, blah, blah, blah. It wasn't about my development. It was about building the team, right? So So that was it. So Edwin sent me the MSA for the top engineers program in the state that it was at the time. And he eventually sent it to me on the 12th of February, thereabouts, with all the annexures. The way the MSA was structured is that you have the master services agreement and you have quite a few annexures, and it was an annexure for each different work stream, one of which was the SDNL one. But I had seen quite a few agreements, so to say, well, they weren't quite contracts, I'll tell you what they were, between Eskom, McKinsey, and McKinsey and Trillion, right? So there were a few. There was a subcontractors agreement that started, that was being negotiated around about the time that I left, between McKinsey and Trillion. And that also forms part of my annexures to this. There was a partnership principles document that the directors from McKinsey had sent to Clive and Eric, talking more towards the culture in which the two companies would work together. And then obviously there was the SDNL annexures and the MSA that then governed the relationship between Eskom and McKinsey. I had reviewed all three. And in my opinion, and I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know if my opinion is even worth anything in this instance, but in my opinion, they didn't talk to the spirit at all of supply and development. They didn't talk to the amount of people that would be transferred. They didn't talk to training. They didn't talk to any skills transfer. So when Edwin sent me those SDNL annexures, which is the first time that I'd seen it, he said to me that I should change it to support the spirit of SDNL, and I did. I had put in KPIs. I made two versions. I used track changes, and I made one version that is quite prescriptive, that gave a view in terms of how building a company that had only two employees at the time to what was envisaged to be about 150 people by the end of the year, how that transition could help and how it could become a leading black management consulting company. And then I made a more succinct version, just because all the contracts seemed pretty short, right? And I didn't. So I sent to, and I thought maybe there would be hope that these KPIs could be enforced. So sorry, I went on maybe a bit too much, but that is the history in terms of what led to that.
So in your view, at that point in time, was that McKinsey had viewed Trillion as a supposedly development partner, but in terms of their actions, you were nothing more than a company that brought them business?
They did not invest in building Trillion. Not in my interactions. So let me rather say that. Maybe they did stuff in the background that I didn't know about. Maybe. But for me, as the CEO of Trillion Management Consulting, and considering that the top engineer's scope was predominantly management consulting, they did nothing to develop it. And that was in my tenure, and granted it was only 4 months. And eventually after, we had a steering committee meeting, I think that was on the 9th of February, right, where a Nodge, he was chairing the steering committee meeting for the top engineers program. And Anoj was very vocal in that steering committee meeting saying, but where are the KPIs? Where is the enablement of SDNL? So the steering committee meeting was cut quite short, and McKinsey had to go and rework the agenda for that specific steering committee meeting. That also is what added to the tension. So then obviously after the steering committee meeting, McKinsey appeared a lot more willing to start discussing these KPIs and so forth, right? But prior to that, they had a team of about 12 people at least at Majuba Power Station working towards the station turnaround, of which Trillion had two. When I pushed and pushed and pushed and I asked them, why can't we bring more analysts? Why can't we bring more consultants? Why can't we get people to just shadow your people? I mean, McKinsey, they've got great people, right? They were like, no, we just want your experts. Now, if you want an expert for a power station, you're not going to get an expert in a power station with a young person who needs to be developed, right? You're not going to get a 20-year-old expert in how to manage power stations. You are going to get your more mature, seasoned people. And that is not what Trillion Management Consulting was going to do. We were not going to become a specialist company. We were going to become a management consulting company. So even when they did say, yes, bring your people, let them shadow us, it wasn't even in the true sense of like we're building up anything. It's like we want you to bring people that obviously are not going to be adding value to your organization.
Okay. Can we then move to 3.18 briefly? Yeah, you may proceed. On 3.18 on page 12 of your statement.
Coco.
Yes.
We've been through it.
Oh, okay.
Would you like me to go through it again?
No. Let's go to 3.19. Sorry for confusion.
Okay. Mohamed Bobet. 3.19 is Mohamed Bobet. So as I mentioned earlier, my interview, I was interviewed by a few people. When Trillian was figuring out whether they wanted me to join, I was interviewed by, first and foremost, Eric and Mohamed Bobat. Straight after that, I was interviewed by Clive. And a few days after that, I was interviewed by Salim. So Mohamed Bobat was interesting because Clive said to me that the intention at the time was actually that Mohamed would take my job. So Mohamed was insurance. If I didn't do a good enough job, Mohamed would be the CEO of Trillian Management Consulting. So I asked the question, well, why didn't he? Why are they even trying to get me? Why are they, you know, why didn't Mohamed take it? And Clive did say to me that there were other plans for Mohamed. So Mohamed and our relationship particularly was around Cocta. Clive's context about there were other plans for Mohamed became clear in December 2015, when I read in the newspapers that Mohamed was working at Treasury. And very shortly after that, went to the minister, to Minister van Rooyen, to Cocta. In January, I think it was the 11th of January 2016, I met Mohamed again, and that was at the MISA offices in Pretoria, where Mohamed helped arrange a meeting between myself, Eric, the two directors from the Oliver Wyman Dubai office, and with Minister van Rooyen. Minister van Rooyen was represented obviously by himself, and then Mohamed Bobet and Ian Whitley, and that was the attendance of the meeting. So my understanding from Eric was that Mohamed was, and also from Clive, not just from Eric, was that Mohamed would be the person who would help us get work in SOEs that we already don't have a relationship with. So Trillian had a relationship already with Eskom and Transnet because some of the contracts from regiments would transfer to Trillian, but there were certain departments that Trillian wasn't involved in, and Mohamed was going to be the person that would help. So I worked with him quite extensively via email, particularly in deriving or compiling an unsolicited proposal for Cocta with the Oliver Wyman Dubai directors.
Okay, we'll get to the details of the transactions. On page 14, until page 16, you're discussing the Trillian business operations. But I'm interested in paragraph 4.6.1, 4.62, 4.63. You can just explain the business operations of Trillian.
Okay, so I'll start with 4.6.1, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So let's go back to when I decided to join Trillian. So I accepted the offer of employment in November 2015. In December 2015, I was introduced to eGateway for the first time. And I didn't understand why. And at that time, I didn't even fully appreciate the scope of the top engineers program. So without really having a scope in terms of what work was secured that we needed to do, I was introduced to this delegation, you know, from Dubai and India. And through them, I actually started understanding the scope of the generation work stream. I went back to Clive, and I think it was probably early in 2016, and I just asked him, why do we have so many subcontractors? That and it was obviously already decided, right? Because Clive would say to me, our boss has an interest in these companies, as I mentioned earlier with Cutting Edge and eGateway, and we will work with them. When I questioned it in 2016, early 2016, he said to me, but we don't have people, and the work needs to start. It's like, okay, that's fine. But then I questioned, but we were supposed to be a proudly South African business. And it's okay, Cutting Edge is South African, so that is cool, but eGateway wasn't. You know, so how are we going to be building up our own skills? And Clive was just like, we need subcontractors right now. We don't have people. We need to work with these people. The boss has decided. That's it. The two specific subcontractors that Trillian worked with in my tenure was eGateway and Cutting Edge. There was a subcontractors agreement that did exist between Trillian and eGateway, because I signed it. I'd never seen a subcontractors agreement between Trillian and Cutting Edge. Is that okay?
Yeah. I just want you to zoom specifically to paragraphs 4.6.1, 4.6.2, 4.6.3. Just the business, the gist of the business operation model.
Okay. So, very shortly after, so straight after Clive knew that I was joining, I was introduced to a lot of people. I've been Cutting Edge being one mission, but also I was introduced to the directors from McKinsey, and that was Dr. Cigar and Dr. Alex Weiss. And it became clear to me very quickly that we, you know, obviously we were working together, but I didn't understand the nature of how we worked together. Clive explained to me that when you get these big projects with our SOEs, you would normally be, the big consulting company would normally be compelled to build up a smaller consulting company. In this instance, Trillian was the smaller consulting company. I mean, I'd never done tender submission work and stuff like that before, right? I mean, working in mining and from the history that I explained to you, this was all very new to me. So I was like, okay, cool. It is fortunate that we could actually work with McKinsey. Then Clive started explaining to me that that was the modus of operandi. Trillian just started. Trillian had just had two employees between January and February. We don't have a history. We don't have a service offering. We didn't even have a company profile for the first 2 months of operations, or technically even for March. We didn't even have a company profile. So how do you get this work, right? Which were questions that I would ask Clive, and Clive was like, we've got the relationships for the big consulting companies to have access to our relationships. We will be the supply development partner for them, and they will build us up. Through that relationship, we will build a management consulting company. So I hope that that talks to what 4.6.2 talks to. As such, we never contracted directly. The contracts with any of our clients, and if that's, and there weren't even contracts, right? So the MSA, when I left Trillian, the MSA was not signed. But the agreements would be with the state-owned entity or department and a major global consulting firm that had the reputation, that had the resources, that would carry clients in terms of quality of delivery. Trillian would be the subcontracting supply development partner to those. McKinsey happened to be that consulting company at Eskom. Oliver Wyman was considered for similar work at Cocta. So we would never contract directly.
Can you, for the record, ma'am, on page 15 of your statement, read from paragraphs 4.61 to 4.63. Just read.
Okay. 4.61. Angel acknowledged that TMC was a newly formed company without a history of doing work in the public sector. TMC's business model was that work is secured through ESSA's relationship, and TMC benefits from these relationships through supply development agreements. 4.6.2. As such, TMC did not directly conduct any work with government departments or state-owned entities like Eskom, Transnet, and Cocta. 4.6.3. Rather, TMC secured the work and thereafter passed the work over to internationally recognized companies and acted as the supply development partner of choice with roughly a 50% share of revenues. The companies that I was instructed to work with included McKinsey South Africa and Oliver Wyman Dubai.
Thank you. At the bottom of the page, you deal with invoices under 4.8. Can you just take the committee through the invoicing between the work supposedly done by your company for Eskom and the payment?
During my tenure at Trillion, I saw one invoice, and that invoice was for 30.6 million rand, and it was for work that was called the corporate plan, and the invoice was submitted to Anuj Singh in February 2016. I saw one invoice. The invoices that I eventually saw for Trillion's work was in the public domain through articles later published, and then also when I was working with Jeff Butlender. So that was hindsight. But during my tenure at Trillion, I saw one invoice. The invoices are interesting because I need to tell you about what I know was happening at the time, but I also need to tell you in hindsight what is concerning. Between the 1st of January or whenever, but up until the point of the 1st of March 2016, Trillion Management Consulting had two employees. There was me and there was my CRO. We didn't do billable work. We were establishing the company. So we were focusing on getting business processes in place. We were focusing on recruiting. We were focusing on getting the structure of the organization ready to accept the individuals from Trillion, regiments that would eventually move over on the 1st of March. I was just understanding the relationship with McKinsey during that period, and I was just understanding the nature of the scope of work that we had secured. Trillion did not do billable work between that period. So when I saw the invoice for 30.6 million, I didn't know what it was for. I had no idea. And it didn't make sense to me. Maybe the big bill had other contexts that I didn't have, but I didn't have that context.
Sorry, this invoice, in your understanding, did it relate to work supposedly that you or your COO would have dealt or done for Eskom?
From Trillion Management Consulting as a subsidiary, absolutely not. Not for Trillion Management Consulting.
But this payment was made in whose favor? This 30 odd million. In whose favor is it made?
It would be in Trillion's favor. So if it is paid, is that the question that you're asking? Do I understand?
Which subsidiary? Trillion has got Trillion Capital Partners as the holding company. There's different subsidiaries, and you at Trillion Management Consulting. You're talking about a 30 odd million invoice. I would like, and you say you didn't do any work to warrant any money to start with, let alone the amount being paid. But is this 30 odd million paid to Trillion Management Consultant?
It was invoiced from Trillion Management Consulting. I don't know if it was paid. In my tenure, I have no idea, but it was submitted from Trillion Management Consulting.
On page 22 of your statement, where you deal with Eskom's transactions, there are two transactions you're discussing. It is the top engineers program at Eskom, and the 7.2 is the Duva boiler replacement project. Can you just roughly take the committee through the top engineers program at Eskom? What do you want to tell the committee in respect of that transaction?
My understanding of the top engineers program at Eskom also changed. I'll tell you what it was initially and I'll tell you how it changed later, but my understanding was that initially was that the top engineers program was put together to really increase inefficiencies at Eskom. I bought into that, and it was because of the top engineers program that I actually accepted the work at Trillion, or to work at Trillion, because especially on the generation piece, let me rather tell you, the work streams that it had, it consisted of the generation work stream. The generation work stream would look at the fleet of the power stations in Eskom and try and increase the EAF. I think the EAF was assumed to be at about 60% for the fleet on average. Please, I stand to be corrected. I kept too much detail. But it was, generation was supposed to increase it. Yeah. The generation of power, so increasing the efficiencies of the power plants. Then there was the primary energy workstream. The primary energy workstream looked at capital optimization of the coal mines and reducing ultimately the price of coal. There were the claims workstreams. The claim workstream would look at Eskom trying to recover project costs from Kusile and Medupe. Then there was a procurement workstream, which would look at just pure bottom line savings based on procurement. The intention behind those work streams, initially, it appeared to me as though it could really be in favour of making Eskom a much better organisation and a much more efficient organisation. So that's what I understood about the Top Engineers Program. McKenzie was initially driving the delivery lead on that, and obviously Trillion would be the supply development partner. Very early on, after I met Clive sent me the first view of cash flows for this program. And the cash flows for the program were quite significant. It wasn't the $475 million that I initially thought it was. It was actually projected to be roughly $10 billion over 3 years. This $10 billion is informed to me by an Excel spreadsheet that was sent through to Clive Angel by Vika Sagar. It detailed each work stream and the expected revenues from that. The spreadsheet was later sent to me about a month later, slightly revised, where the $10 million became something like, I think it was $10 billion became $8.6 billion. The work streams are still the same. In each spreadsheet, there was a percentage allocation to which McKenzie would get revenue and Trillion would get revenue. So that's what I understand from a commercial arrangement of the Top Engineers Program. I understand that the Top Engineers Program was also on a very different type of contractual structure from what typically management consultants would do. From my experience in management consulting, it's normally time and materials billing. This specific contractual term was different. It was regarded as being 100% at risk, which in essence meant that the consultants only got paid once they demonstrated efficiency improvements to the clients.
The Duva boiler replacement project? What was the company meant to do in that respect?
So, informed by my background in mining, I understood the Duva replacement project to be very much an EPC type project where the boiler needed to literally be replaced. So it wasn't a management consulting role. It wasn't a management consulting type project in any way. It was an EPC project. However, the relationship with Trillion and the Duva project was eGateway. eGateway, the job has specifically said to me that they are working with, they are doing the Duva replacement. I saw what I thought was a contract, it's also part of my annexures, where there's a specific Chinese company, I think it's Hypec, that was actually had a relationship with Eskom. I don't understand the relationship between eGateway and that organization at all. But I do know that eGateway asked for an audience with Edwin Mabalani to discuss Duva, that they were bringing people in from Dubai and from India to work on the Duva project. They Trillion needed to be, or was requested to be their BE partner for this work, Trillion Management Consulting specifically. And Trillion Management Consulting needed to help them get their team members' visas. So I was involved in helping eGateway do this work, but Trillion Management Consulting was not going to do the work.
The last portion of your statement deals with your experience whilst at Trillion with officials and the minister, current minister of COGTA. Can you just share with the committee what the relationship was between Trillian and Cogta.
I did not have a relationship with the minister. I had a relationship with Mohammed Bobet. Mohammed Bobet was the conduit to the minister. Oliver Wyman was chosen to be the global consulting company to work at Cogta. After meeting the minister, during the meeting with the minister mentioned that there were some opportunities that related to the Back to Basics program. Oliver Wyman went back to Dubai, started drafting a proposal, an unsolicited proposal to address that need. Mohammed Bobet was the person who gave directions in terms of how the proposal should be structured. When there was a question that the Oliver Wyman directors needed clarity on to ensure that the proposal was structured sufficiently, I would be the conduit of communication. I would send the email to Mohammed and I would say, okay, Oliver Wyman needs clarity on this. And he would reply and he'd say, fine, I'll caucus with the minister, I'll get back to you. And to that, I've got annexures as well of emails, you know, backing that up. So that was the relation with the minister. I did not have a relationship directly with him.
Were you at any time involved or at a meeting where you personally met the minister?
Yes, that was on the 11th of January 2016, I think it was. It was in the afternoon sometime. The meeting was attended by Mohammed Bobet, Ian Whitley, the minister, myself, Eric Wood, and the two directors from Oliver Wyman Dubai. At that meeting, Oliver Wyman presented the organization's capabilities, particularly in the public sector. Because these directors were from Dubai, they presented a lot of the work and the exposure that they had in the public sector, you know, in Dubai, not South Africa. For that meeting, Eric would ask me to compile a company profile, which was incredibly difficult for me to do because there were only two employees at the time, and we had no history, and we hadn't done any other work. So I compiled a presentation that consisted of about six slides that was so generic, and that was presented to the minister. And 2 days later, the communication started between Trillian, the Oliver Wyman directors, and Mohammed Bobet to compile this proposal.
This meeting with the minister, how was it arranged?
It was arranged through the lady's name, but through particularly Mohammed Bobet. Ian Whitley was CC'd through the correspondence. But there was an administration lady, which please forgive me if I don't remember her name, but it's in the email. There was the conduit of arranging the meeting. We were told what the protocol would be in terms of addressing the minister. We arranged the times and all that, all the arrangements for the meeting, but particularly was with Mohammed.
So would it be correct to say the meeting was arranged through email communications, which form annexure to your statement?
Correct.
Is it correct that at the meeting, the minister shares with the attendees of the meeting the plans of the department, which includes the Back to Basics program?
Correct.
Subsequent to the meeting, is it my understanding correct that proposals then were to be prepared by the potential service providers for the department?
Correct.
In your understanding, were those proposals subsequently made?
I don't know. The proposals were still being discussed by the time I had left Trillium.
In conclusion, I just need to reaffirm my understanding of your testimony. And please correct me if I misunderstood your testimony. Is that this Trillion Capital Partners and its subsidiaries were formed specifically to deal with the public sector. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And at the time that you left, the focal points were Eskom, Transnet, and COGTA.
Correct.
And that there was no need for you to bring in business because there was already secured business.
Correct.
And that this business was not going to be done or discharged effectively by your company, but the role of your company was to introduce these international companies to these public sector companies.
Correct.
That is in line with the business operations that you've outlined before the committee. Is that correct?
Correct.
And that for introducing, for your company introducing these international companies to these state-owned companies and public sector departments, your company will get an introduction fee.
Trillion acted as a service, as a supply development partner. And from the Excel spreadsheets of McKinsey, the revenue split would be roughly 50% of the estimated revenues for the entire duration of the contract. In that instance, was 3 years. I don't know about Oliver Wyman and COGTA, but that's the remuneration or the revenue model that I understood.
Okay, so the benefit is we introduce you this big international company. Our benefit as a company would be we become this development partner. And that's how we earn the fee.
Correct.
In a statement, you make reference to this being a three-year project. What do you mean by this?
When you read the annexures and the MSA of the top engineers program, there's no tenure, but there's no timeline with it. But when you look at the forecast, you see the forecast typically are 3 years. And I asked Clive exactly this, how long would we be working with these with the organizations? And Clive, on more than one occasion, said it's for the current dispensation. For clarity, I asked him, how long do I forecast my budget for? He said up until 2019. So all the work that I did as a CEO of Trillion Management Consulting always looked at a cash flow and a forecast up until 2019 and not beyond that. I questioned, Clive, what happens beyond that, because in my understanding we're building a company that's going to last more than 3 years. That is my understanding. And he says we're going to consider those options when we get there, potentially list the organization after 3 years, but for now our relationships were for 3 years.
Were your sights set at any other public sector department or client in terms of planning? I know your stay was a very short one. But in terms of focusing and your plans, were you, which other public sector entities or departments were you looking at, if any?
Eric gave me the assurance that I could include Transnet in part of my forecast. So I took the assumptions for, like, for example, the GFB project projected that because he told me that would happen again, SWAT 2 would happen again. I'm mentioning these acronyms, but I didn't work on them, and I don't know the context of those specific work streams, but I do know that I forecasted revenue from those work streams in my budget. That was for Transnet. Obviously, Eskom is based off the cash flow statement that we got from McKinsey, and we also forecasted slightly for the Free State Municipality. So it was Eskom Transnet, and then there were assumptions made for COCTA.
No further questions, sir.
Thank you very much for your questions, and thank you very much for your responses, Ms. Goodson. I will now give over to the members, but what I would want to know, in one of your annexes that are in this pack, especially the one that is written AG, it's just written AG, annexa AG, okanye annexa AG, there's a 26 million, let me not read it because in case I don't get the number correctly, but there's a 26 million plus that has been that is called a professional fee, pro rate share of the Eskom corporate plan deliverable. I just want to check to you, did Trillion make the plan, or there was somebody from Eskom who did the plan and gave it to Trillion, and then Eskom thereafter paid the 26 million to Trillion? Just wanted to check on that. Then I'll give over to the members to ask questions. If you can just explain on that.
Madam Chair, I don't know is my answer, and I don't know that Trillion did this work. I can tell you from Trillion Management Consulting, on the 31st of January 2016, Trillion Management Consulting had two employees. Those two employees did not do this work because I was one of them and the other one reported into me. So the two employees from Trillion Management Consulting did not do this work. If this is for anything else, I don't know. But on that date, for that amount of money, which is 30.6 million, including VAT, from Trillion Management Consulting, no. I didn't do that work, and my COO did not do that work.
But do you know of any transaction that went into the bank of Trillion that was 30.6 million?
Later, when I was working with Jeff Budlender, so this was now almost a year later, I believe that this is one of the invoices that was paid. It was eventually paid, I think it was April or a bit later than that. At the time when I was at Trillion, I had absolutely no sight of any of the financials. I didn't compile this invoice. I didn't process this invoice. And I certainly didn't have any sight into any bank accounts of Trillion to see whether this was paid or not. But based on Jeff Budlender's annexures, it appears as though this invoice was paid.
Thank you very much, Ms. Goodson. Members, Mazoni, Natasha, Tash, Mr. Swart, Mr. Marais. Is your hand up, Honorable Teddy? Oh, that hand is up. Is Khaula. I almost wrote it, Shivambo. And then Teddy. Comrade Teddy, your hand is up now. Oh, thank you very much. In that order, we'll start with Kungubele.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Ms. Goodson, am I right?
Yes.
Okay. As a CEO...
Just bring your mic a little bit down near to your mouth.
Yes. What seems to strangely cutting across your entire work in that short time as a CEO of Trillion Consulting, am I correct? I have no sense whether you had a plan as a CEO on the basis of which you were supposed to be doing your work. Assuming that there's an element of fiduciary imperatives at your level with regard to you having such a plan. Can you explain what was the situation regarding a plan in the short space that you were supposed to be using as a CEO?
Thank you. Please indulge me. I just want to make sure that I understand the question correctly.
Can I repeat it?
Just define the plan.
Don't answer it if you don't understand. I'm saying, as a CEO, conventionally, you were supposed to be having a plan which you are supposed to follow, on the basis of which you are supposed to be appraised in terms of your performance. And as you speak, I don't seem to pick that something like that ever existed in that short space of your.
Yes, I did not have formalized KPIs. I did not have a formalized job description. I did not have formal performance appraisers, and I did not have formal expectation setting with my manager, Clive Angel. My relationship was that the expectations were communicated to me on that day, or instructions rather, and I had to execute against them. So there was no formal structure. I had an informal plan, and that informal plan in my mind was to build a consulting company with great IP and great skills.
I guess consulting companies do not have a common perspective. In your situation, where would you have secured got the perspective of that company? Whose plan was in your mind?
It was clear to me that the plans that I was expected to execute, they were communicated to me directly from Clive Angel. And Clive would very often tell me that he would get the plans from the boss, which was Salimisa. So the expectations was how I executed against those plans.
Were you not concerned about this situation?
My concern grew with time. In the beginning, when I first joined the organization, I was still trying to understand my landscape. Obviously, with the time I resigned, which was just 3 months into it, or 2.5 months rather into it, I was concerned and I did resign.
If you have, when did you resign?
I resigned on the 19th of March 2016.
If you were fired in February, what would be your defense?
If I was fired in February?
Yes. Resigning in March was your decision?
Yes.
But if they decided to fire you in February, what was going to be your defense? If they said go?
Forgive me, can you please just elaborate the question?
I'm saying if you had no plan, and they decided on their own to fire you in February, on what basis would you refuse to go?
So, on a personal basis, if an employer doesn't want me, I would walk away. I voluntarily resigned.
You don't like conflict.
I'm okay with conflict, but there has to be logic in it, right?
So, it appears that in a short space of time, you had interaction with a lot of people. Even SOEs, you had interaction. Am I correct?
Correct.
I guess you were having interaction with them in pursuit of the consulting purpose, you being a service provider to whom?
Absolutely.
Who was your direct client?
Ruth Eskom.
Yes. So these meetings you were having during the 3 months you were there with Eskom, Mabalana being a main contact, what were they about?
particularly towards the scope of work where teams were on the ground starting to deliver in line of the scope of work of the Top Engineers Program, which was those four work streams that I explained earlier. But, and in addition to that, my role was to ensure that Trillion Management Consulting actually was built as an organization. So I wanted to grow the skills and the human capital in that organization.
You are also saying you were called into a meeting with a director of Cutting Edge, Chobe, if I'm pronouncing it correct, who were going to be subcontractors to the consulting unit that you were CEO of. Did they subcontract?
Cutting Edge had a significant presence in Megawatt Park. When I say significant presence, in terms of the number of FTEs, so full-time employees, that were working together with McKinsey on the procurement side. I think in total they had about seven team members that worked every day together with the McKinsey team on procurement. That suggested to me that they were subcontracted. And the reason I'm saying suggested is because I personally have never seen a subcontracting agreement between Trillion and Cutting Edge. I have with eGateway, but not with Cutting Edge.
You're saying presumably they were subcontracted. What would be evidence of that if they were subcontracting?
A written contract.
Between them and who?
Trillion Management Consulting.
But you never had that?
I did not see one. I asked Clive Angel about it. Clive told me that it had been handled.
There's also another strange development where you were being asked, I guess, by Angel, if I'm correct, to look for a chairperson for TCP Board, which is a holding company. Am I correct? If that's a holding company, TCM was a subsidiary, am I right?
Correct.
Then a board of TCP is a very high-level principal structure. Am I correct?
Correct.
Can you explain why was it possible that you were asked to look for chairperson of such a structure?
Just to a point of clarity on that. Stanley Shane, Mark Chipkin, Clive Angel, and Eric Wood were compiling a business profile that was required to that was requested or instructed rather from Salim, because Salim was looking for a chairperson of the board. So I assisted them in the compilation of the business profile. I didn't assist them in finding a chairperson of a board. It was just the business profile that is required.
The way it is written in that paragraph, I think, is paragraph 3.3.3. It says, ESSA was trying to find a chairperson for the TC board. They passed this work on to me. That's bigger than what you explained.
Sorry, let me make it very clear. They passed the work of the business profile compilation on to me.
It's important to clarify that. Because the way it is now, it's like the entire work was given to you. You can understand my frowning that. Looking how high that structure was, how would you be responsible heading a subsidiary to actually look for the chair of that structure? In other words, it was like hiring your boss, your bigger boss. That's the point I'm making.
Yeah.
The other issue is, if you can, you said there's never been a billable work. And if you say there's never been a billable work during your period, and you say the business was already there, and until you left, there was no billable work, what would be the primary defining element of your performance in the absence of billable work?
I would envisage in that instance it should be the establishment of the organization. in itself, and what we had done and what existed by the time I left was a structured organogram representing current status of the organization, where it would be in 10 months after that and where it would be a year after. We standardized job descriptions, we standardized human capital. My CEO and I focused particularly on getting the human capital processes firm and thorough. We looked at talent acquisition, we looked at skills development, we looked at retention, we looked at the promotions, and we focused particularly on business process establishment. So I believe that that would have been a key KPI of the 3 months' worth of work, and I believe that we delivered on that.
You are saying on the email of Chobe, it appeared that Chobe was working for Sahara, am I right?
Correct.
Do you know Sahara and who owns Sahara?
Yes, I do.
Who owns Sahara?
Okbay, is that correct?
Who owns Okbay?
I believe the Gupta family are major shareholders in that.
My last point, Chair, before you fire me, you say there was this gateway, e-gateway. What do you understand by these people, the e-gateway?
They were power generation specialists. That, I'm telling you what they told me they do. They were power generation specialists that helped in increasing efficiency of power stations.
How did Teboho tell you, that's my last question, how did Teboho tell you that the minister will be removed on the 16th of March,
16.
That's my last point.
Yeah. Teboho didn't tell me. He wrote it on Ms. Mathepo's book. He wrote it on a notebook and he said they're replacing the finance minister. At the time, the finance minister was Minister Gordhan.
What I forgot to do was to express my gratitude, by the way. Something I was supposed to have started with for the bravery you have displayed to come and interact with us. Thanks, Ms. Kutsin.
I will do it for you, don't worry. Ms. Mazon.
Thank you, Chair. Ms. Kutsin, my name is Natasha Mazzoni, and I'm a member of the Public Enterprises Committee. Ms. Goodson, I'm concerned with firstly, I also want to say thank you for coming. You are doing a great patriotic duty by coming to give evidence and raise your concerns in this committee. So thank you very much for that. And you have no reason to be nervous as well. I know you were nervous earlier, and I hope you're not nervous now, because there's nothing to be nervous about. E-Gateway, cutting-edge commerce, even Oliver Wyman. I'm concerned why everything was linked specifically to Dubai. And I'm gonna tell you why I'm concerned. We are reading in the public domain, and we've heard via various people that have testified and people that have come forward with information that ministers have gone to Dubai, very senior members of government's children have gone to Dubai. Very serious and senior members of government have gone to Dubai. And I want to know if you, during your interaction, have any idea why specifically Dubai was used as what seems to be a sort of central point for things to meet, and, you know, everything sort of amassed and was decided upon in or through Dubai.
I don't know why.
So you don't know why?
No.
Okay, that's fair enough. At any point, so you worked with Salim Issa, and you referred to him colloquially as the boss. Did you ever meet with the boss's boss? In other words, did you ever meet with people that were instructing Salim Issa as to what to do and how to do it?
No.
No. Do you have any idea who the boss's boss was?
No.
No. So in your time at working at Trillium, did you ever meet with any of the Gupta family? Did you ever meet, we know that you met with Minister Van Rooyen. Did you ever meet with the Minister, I'll explain to you who, did you maybe ever meet with the Minister of Energy? Did you meet with the Minister of Public Enterprises? Did you meet with the Minister of Finance? Did you meet with the President? Did you meet with any of the Gupta family?
No.
No, so you never met, so the only minister you ever personally met with was Minister Des Van Rooyen?
Correct.
And in his capacity as Cogta Minister?
Correct.
Okay, fair enough. Che, in your statement, 5.5.6, you explain the cutting edge, which was appointed to conduct work for the procurement work stream of the Eskom top engineers. They had full-time employees based at Megawatt Park. So we know Megawatt Park is Eskom's head office. Were there any other employees that were based at Megawatt Park, and did you ever have to go to Megawatt Park to do work for Trillium?
Yeah, I went to Megawatt Park often. For the steering committee meetings, there were two during my tenure, to go and touch base with the cutting-edge guys, because they represented Trillium, to just have meetings with the McKenzie team. So the McKenzie team was based at Megawatt Park. So there was a presence for the primary energy workstream. They were based at Megawatt Park. The procurement workstream was based at Megawatt Park. The claims workstream wasn't based at Megawatt Park. They were based, Eskom has got another building. I think it's in Elgin Road. Mm-hmm. The claims workstream, I think, was based there. The generation workstream was based at Majuba. Majuba was the first power station selected, so they had quite a strong team there, and Trillium had two people with that team. So I went to Megawatt Park a lot.
So based on the fact that when you worked at Trillium, I don't know if we can call you a team, but you were a pair. It was you and the boss. And you went specifically because you had this idea of what was going to be created, very much like your colleague came and testified. She had an idea of what was going to be created, and then it wasn't created. Looking back now, and as an outsider, why do you think Trillium was created?
I have an opinion on that.
Yeah, that's all I want. I want your opinion.
Please just respectfully see where I'm coming from.
Of course.
I would prefer to not air my opinion in this forum. I think it's important that what I present to the committee are the facts that I have and the information that I have.
Ms. Goodson, I don't want you to be scared, because whatever you tell us in here, there's a reason we put you under oath. And it's because anything that you tell us here can't be used against you, because you are helping the state, you are helping us, you are helping Parliament. So you mustn't be scared to tell us something, because it can't be used against you. So I don't want to force you, but I just want to tell you that's why we have you here under oath. It's because you are protected to tell us anything.
Thank you. So in hindsight, I believe that I was lied to blatantly in terms of what my opinion is, that what I was told that Trillium would become, which was a leading black-owned, proudly South African management consulting company, I believe that was a lie. I believe that I was blatantly lied to.
Okay.
And now in hindsight, it's my opinion that entity was created to simply get 50% of certain revenues. I don't know who for and for what, but for not really doing much work.
Perfect. I want to let you know it's my opinion that Trillium was created to siphon money off our state-owned entities and siphon them into a direction that certain very powerful people wanted. So that's my opinion, so that you know what my opinion is. Ms. Goodson, Salim Isop seems to have had an immense amount of power and pull in terms of very, very important decisions that were taken by Trillium involving McKinsey. And this particular name comes up in various roles and in various state-owned entities. It's not only Eskom, it comes up in other places. What was your relationship towards the end with Salim Esop? Did things get tense? Were things difficult? Did you approach him and did you say, I think that there's a problem here? And did he ever respond to anything like that?
When I had issues with McKenzie, I was at the meeting when I told him what my concerns were. I got the sense from Salim that Salim actually liked me. He would always give me assurance, you know, Bianca's going to be fine. When I'd be walking in the Melrose precinct, and if I walked past him, he was always very reassuring to me. I've got your back, let me know if you need anything. I didn't speak to him often, I spoke to Clive. Clive escalated things to Salim. So on the few occasions that I did see Salim, he was very supportive of me. So I think it was an okay relationship.
Chair, just give me a second, because there's a lot of paperwork here, and I've written notes on various. I want to discuss with you McKenzie for a second.
Honorable Mazoni,
yes.
Can you give them a chance? They want to go through their papers. I think they want to put them according to the written notes that the advisor, the legal advisor, has given to Ms. Gunson. Is that what you were asking for?
No. We're good, Chair. Thanks. Yeah.
Carry on.
Thanks, Chair. Ms. Goodson, if at any time you want to refer to your notes, just say so. It's no problem at all. McKenzie, as you know, it's been broadcast. There's criminal charges that have been brought against McKenzie in terms of the Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act. The FBI is now investigating. Now, we had a colleague of yours testify here that certainly she didn't feel that McKenzie had done an amount of work for Eskom that warranted the huge payments that were made to the consultancy firm. Did you see a huge amount of consultancy work being done by McKenzie, and do you think that South Africa got value for money? Again, this is your opinion.
There were a lot of people that were busy for a long time that did happen on the four work streams. I don't have sight into the rate card and what informed some of those invoices and that payment from McKenzie's side. I know what the forecast of cash flows were, and I know the different payment mechanisms in terms of the MSA. I was familiar with that. With regards to an opinion towards whether it's worth it, I don't know.
Okay. So the money that was paid to Trillion, that shouldn't have been paid to Trillion, as per your testimony and as per your statement. Where did that money go? Do you know, where does Trillion have a bank account? So in other words, what I'm saying is a state-owned entity has an obligation, according to law, to pay money to a certain bank account that's registered, and, you know, invoices have to be issued, and there's a very strict process that should be followed. How did this payment, when it arrived at Trillion, how was this payment processed?
I don't know. As I said, at the subsidiary level, we had absolutely no sight in terms of how money was managed. I did not compile the invoice. I didn't process the invoice. I seen that invoice after it was sent. Mm-hmm. So the extent to which I was kept out of the financial management of the organization was, I was kept out completely. So I don't know from that cash flow perspective. However, as much as I was kept out, I was instructed to open the bank accounts. So in January 2016, I opened up an Absa bank account, which I was informed was the main bank account for Trillion Management Consulting. Then in March, and what led to my resignation eventually, was me being instructed to open up a Bank of Baroda account. I was informed that the Bank of Baroda account was to facilitate payments with eGateway. So I'm aware of those two accounts for Trillion Management Consulting, but I had no access. I didn't have the internet login access. I didn't have a credit card for either one of them, a corporate credit card. I didn't see any money go in. I didn't pay any money out.
That's actually quite scary because, in other words, someone's asking you to open a bank account on their behalf, but you have absolutely zero control of what goes in or out of that bank account. Is that clear? I mean, is that's basically what happened.
On the 18th of March, I was informed to go to Integrated Capital's offices to sign paperwork to open up the Bank of Baroda account. But in addition to the normal Bank of Baroda account paperwork that I needed to sign, there was a letter that was drafted for me, which was a blatant lie because it made reference to a meeting on the 17th of March that said that that the directors had decided. And they decided that I would open up the Bank of Baroda account and I would transfer all transactional rights of that account to Mark Chipkin. I never was at the meeting on the 17th. I didn't decide that and I wouldn't have signed that. So I sat in Integrated's offices and I forced them to rewrite the letter that Mark Chipkin and I would both transact. The gentleman from the Bank of Baroda asked me, he said that this is impractical. It means that every single time you want to do something, the two of you have to do it together. He even asked me, he says, is it and or? I said, it's and. And I signed that letter. And when I was driving home from that meeting that afternoon, I realized how disempowering it was. I realized that these gentlemen from Integrated Capital were not necessarily giving me instructions to do things that appeared to be right. None of my previous employers had ever asked me to do something like that before.
You were at Trillion for a short period of time, and you resigned quite soon and quite abruptly. What happened? What led to your and please feel free to be honest. What led to your resignation?
The week that I resigned is quite interesting because a lot of things happened that week before my resignation. So I resigned at about 6 o'clock in the morning on the 19th of March, which is a Saturday. And that specific week, there were quite a few interesting events that took place. The first of which was on Wednesday, the 16th of March, where Teboho Lebolo wrote in my colleague's notebook that the finance minister was going to be replaced. When he wrote that, I honestly thought that I was going crazy. I didn't believe what I'd seen. Later on that evening, we had our first EXCO. And at that EXCO, the concern about, you know, the not having contracts with these SOEs were raised, or specifically with Eskom was raised, because such a significant amount of the assumed revenue was going to be coming from Eskom. And we were all aware of the fact that we're getting paid, but we weren't getting money in, right? We raised it up with Clive Angel and Eric Wood, and they just said, don't worry about it, it's going to be fine. I can't remember this, if anything significant happened on the Thursday, but then the Friday was the Bank of Baroda. The Thursday, or I think it was the Friday as well, I had raised a concern with Clive regarding remuneration structures, specifically for my CIO and I, because the truth is that my CIO and I had moved from Anglo-American to Trillion and financially were worse off. We weren't on a horizontal basis. We really did take the knock based on what we thought the benefit would be. And we raised it up after the first quarter because we thought that was reasonable. After the first quarter, we would have demonstrated value. Clive's response to me raising that query with him was that it wasn't up for me. It wasn't up for me to decide. They had already been decided. So by the time I resigned, it was very clear to me how disempowered I was. I was told to open a bank account that I had to write over all transactional authorities to. I couldn't even have an influence over my CEO's salary or remuneration structures that would only affect even much later. And I was working for an organization where information like finance minister replacements was something that was being discussed in the corridors. So by the time I resigned, collectively those were the straws that broke the camel's back.
Check. Then my last question. And again, I'll tell you from me so that you don't feel nervous. I have legal action pending against me. Has anyone threatened you with any legal action for coming out about this? And has anyone threatened you in any other way? Because the only way that you keep safe is to make it known as publicly as possible. And this is the most public forum we can offer you to tell us if you have been threatened either legally or in any other way.
I have not been threatened in any way. I've been blessed. My safety has not been threatened. There have been no legal charges laid against me. So I've been very fortunate.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honorable Swart.
Chairperson, thank you. Just from our side as well. My name is Steve Swart. Thank you for coming to give testimony. And you are blessed. You are protected. But we just want to encourage you to feel free to share with us whatever you believe is necessary as we get to the bottom. But I do want to ask you whether any law enforcement agency has approached you, given the fact that the Public Protector's report made substantial finding and it was referred to both the Hawks and the NPA to investigate the whole issue of state capture of ESCOM. Has any member of the Hawks approached you following your statement that you made on the internet and following you being here? It's a year later already, and one would have thought. I just want to clarify, did you give evidence to the, you gave evidence to the Bud Lindner Commission, but to the Public Protector. So you gave evidence to the Public Protector. That evidence is available, and did anyone approach you following the evidence that you gave?
I gave evidence to the Public Protector in an anonymous way, so I'm not sure if it would be made available. I did support Jeff Budlinder, and no one has approached me. And I made the statement on the 27th of September on the website, but no institution has approached me. The only institution that did approach me was the Public Protector a year prior, when they were compiling that report, but no other institution.
And then you gave evidence to the Budlinder investigation into Trillium. Have you read the Budlinder report at all?
Yes.
And you'll notice it's quite scathing in the lack of cooperation. This is a report sanctioned by Trillium itself, by Mr. Toko Sekwala, and there seems to be a total lack of cooperation with that inquiry, and there are some scathing reports there. Would it be correct? Would you agree with the assertion in the Budlinder report, there's a link with Mr. Issa where it says he's a very close business associate with the members of the Gupta family. This is widely reported. He's sometimes referred to as the fourth brother, and neither Mr. Issa nor the Guptas have ever disputed this. The evidence appears overwhelming that Mr. Issa, who you had a relationship with work-wise, is indeed very closely associated with the Gupta family and in business with them. That's a finding of the Budlinder report. Would you have any reason to disagree with that?
I've got no reason to disagree with the Budlinder report, no.
Thank you. Then on the issue of the Bank of Baroda account, we now also know that funds were deposited from Trillium to the Bank of Baroda account and then were transferred to the escrow agent for the whole purchase of the Optimum Mine by Oak Bay, by Tegeta stroke Oak Bay. So your reluctance to get involved with that whole Bank Baroda, but you were quite understand that. But we now know, and it's also a finding of the Budlinder report, that various Trillium subsidiaries, accounts at Baroda, funds were used to fund that purchase. Would you, and that is in the Budlinder report as well, would you be in agreement with that as far as it is related? You might not have personal knowledge of that, but it, as far as it is within the Budlinder report.
I've got no reason to dispute the findings of the Budlinder report.
Then we also had extensive evidence from the CEO of Trillium Financial Advisory, Ms. Matepu, sketching the whole background, regiments, the role of Mr. Woods, Mr. Issa there with Transnet, and then we see Trillium with a focus now on ESCOM. And it seems that, to me, Trillium, and prior to, you wouldn't have known about regiments, but mainly Trillium became the gatekeeper to these consulting contracts with SOEs. And in particular, when you look at McKinsey, they needed a BEE partner, and Trillium was that partner. And you were then brought in on the basis of supply development, which is very good and noble. But then suddenly you have to subcontract all your work, 77% of your work, to Gateway, which is in Dubai, which has got nil BEE credentials. And that obviously raised problems with you, and that would have impacted your relationship with everyone around and with McKinsey. And I'm sure you started to see alarm bells then, that this is actually a sham. Would that be correct?
The presence of subcontractors and the extent to which subcontractors did do the work did go against what was said to me in terms of Trillium Management Consulting was supposed to be a leading black-owned, proudly South African management consulting company. Hence why I said in my earlier answer to Ms. Mazon's question that, in my opinion, that statement was a lie.
And this then obviously led to your frustration where you had the emotional out, you started crying quite understandably when you were meeting with the Eskom folk to explain your lack of the relationship with McKinsey. You wanted to do a certain job and they were almost saying, well, take your 30%, you're getting your 30% and we're not really interested in anything else. Would that be correct, that it was almost like they weren't expecting you to provide much work? It was purely you getting your portion of this contract and be satisfied with that. Would that be correct?
It's absolutely correct in terms of that was one of the triggers in terms of why I did have a bit of an emotional moment with Coco Machella. And that certainly was the climate in which I worked with McKinsey leading up to that. And up to today, McKinsey was never explicit in terms of this is how we would actually transition the organization, Trillium Management Consulting, from a startup through IP and headcount to what would be a fully fledged business. For the time that I was there, I never received any input from McKinsey on their side. I submitted quite a few suggestions and recommendations, but I never got anything from them in terms of that's how it would work.
So your evidence corroborates the other evidence that we heard from Ms. Matepu to a large degree, in the whole regard of Trillium. And she reaches the conclusion in her statement, and I'd ask you to listen very carefully to what she says. She says that I am of the view that the payments that's 2 trillion by Eskom were made in contravention of the PFMA and the Companies Act and are unlawful. And I do not think that Eskom paid, the fees paid were reasonable, for the value worked, and that it could have been performed by the internal treasury division by Eskom. Is there any reason for you to disagree with that statement by, although she was CEO of a separate subsidiary, that was her view of the payments that were made to Trillium?
I've got no reason to disagree with it, but from my side, I can't completely agree with it either because I don't know the details of the PFMA, and I also don't know the details of the Companies Act, so I'm not in a position to agree nor disagree.
Let me just assist you. One of the articles of the PFMA, Section 51, that constrains SOEs to make sure that they act in an honest fashion, that there are no irregular and wasteful expenditures. And so we now know that Eskom has admitted the payments that were made to McKinsey and Trillium were not in accordance with the PFMA, and they are seeking to recover that. Rather belated, in my view. So that is just a bit of information that it would substantiate her view that it is in breach of that, and that is why Eskom is now trying to recover those funds. I'd like to just take you then to a second issue, and that is the meeting with Minister Des van Rooyen, where you, as a new company, and it was in your first or second month, you went and you met with the minister, and you made a proposal of the work that you were going to do, full knowing that Trillium at that stage did not have the capacity. I think that comes out in your statement. You would be able to develop the capacity something, but were you not surprised that the minister at that stage seemed very satisfied with your proposal on the basis that he didn't ask you, do you have the capacity to do this work? You are basically, if I understood correctly, two members, the CEO and yourself at that stage, and he seemed very relaxed about the proposal, given the fact that Mr. Boback was his advisor at that stage, and that he might well have advised the minister, having worked with Trillium, that there is a need to accept trillion to do that work.
Just for clarity, the meeting with the minister, we presented the respective organisations' capabilities. Oliver Wyman presented their capabilities in the public sector, particularly as they've worked within Dubai, and I presented what I thought were the capabilities of Trillion, what Trillion would acquire, what the capabilities would become. I presented that. The minister seemed happy with those capabilities as presented. At the back of that meeting, so 2 days after that meeting, the proposal compilation started. I don't know what was communicated back to the minister, because at that point my communication was strictly with Mohamed Boba. So that's clear.
I do understand. And then I'd like to just ask you about that invoice of the 30 million. Had you, in your view, done work to generate that into, I mean, to me it's very logical, but maybe you'd like to answer that. You receive an invoice you generate an invoice, and that invoice is then paid, and you had questions around that invoice. Would you just unpack that a little bit more on the work that you'd done by that stage, at that stage?
The original invoice that I saw submitted was submitted to Anuj Singh on the 3rd of February 2015. And at that point, I had formally been working for Trillion for, 31 plus 2 days. So for 33 days, I'd been working for Trillion. My CEO had joined at most a week after I did. So in effect, when that invoice was initially sent to Anuj Singh, there were two employees at Trillion Management Consulting, one of which was myself. We had not done any billable work. That invoice was dated 31st of January 2016, although distributed to Anuj on the 3rd of February. There was a cover letter with it that contained my signature. I did not write that cover letter. I did not sign that cover letter. I did not compile the invoice. I didn't distribute the letter and the invoice to Anuj. I didn't process that invoice because I had no sight of payment, or whenever. Right? I only found out about payment, like I said, a year later when I saw the information that Jeff Budlender had.
And lastly, there's a lot of information in the public domain now, and I'm sure you've been following it, and I don't want to be unfair to you, but one of the documents that we have is prepared by academics, and they reflect on the following, and I'd like you, and I don't want to be unfair to you, I'll ask you whether, because at the outset you said you are a spoke in a wheel, and I'm not sure whether you've now gathered what the wheel is, and this is part of what this inquiry is about. And one of the issues that are raised by the academics is they make this comment, and they say, reflecting on Trillion's dealings with Eskom, it appears as if the Gupta-linked consultancy, that would be via Mr. Issa and the relationship with the Guptas that is set out in the Budlender report and the public protector and elsewhere, primarily functioned as a conduit through which large sums were transmitted to Gupta-connected networks. However, Trillion, previously regiments, also allowed direct lines of communication between top Eskom officials and Gupta agents to be established with some semblance of normalcy. Are you able to comment on that as a bigger wheel, or would that be unfair for you to comment on this?
Respectfully, I really, for me it's really important that what I share with this committee is the integrity of the facts that I present is there, and I really want to, you know, my opinion I think is for my friends and I'm home type of thing.
I understand.
And I do understand that it's a safe place where I can share it here, but what I would like to share with you is the facts that I have. I've made a copy of my computer from Trillion. My statement is informed and backed up completely by emails and documents that come from that copy, and we've made the copy available to the committee as well, just to ensure that the integrity of what I say is there. So if you respectfully,
I appreciate your answer, I really do, but we as members of parliament are also connecting the dots with the different inquiries, the different fact findings that we've got before us, and in particular when one looks at the Budlander report and when one looks at the public protector's report, which, remember, the factual findings of the public protector's report have not been taken on review by ESCOM, and therefore they stand. A certain legal part of that has been taken on review by the president, but the factual findings still stand. So there is a lot of evidence out there, and you've served to corroborate some of that, and from our side, I'm very grateful for you to be here. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Swart. Honorable Mare.
Thank you, Chair. I want to go to 3.2.8 in your statement on the 2nd of February 2016. Angel called me and asked me to come to the office to sign a few documents. In short, you didn't sign it. You sent him actually the JPEG of your signature. At the next paragraph, you stated in 3.2.9, I later realized that the signature I sent to Angel was used on invoices and formal letters without my consent. Now, you resigned on the 19th of March, although you've worked until April, is that correct? Now, in that period that you were worked, did you at any stage confront Clive Angel about the misusing of your signature on documentation?
I raised the query regarding a letter that was sent to ESCOM that contained the JPEG about Trillian's relationship with Mohammed Bobat. But I just said to him, to Clive, in an email, I said it contains my signature, but I didn't sign it. That was the extent to which I raised the query with him, and not more than that. So the reason why I didn't is, you know, I've never worked for an employer before where I didn't trust them, ever. This is the first time, and this is a very new and a very weird experience for me to have an employer that I didn't trust is something that is incredibly, incredibly foreign to me. I sent that JPEG to Clive to sign what was going to be a payment for our rental. That was the understanding. So to see it misused, especially in hindsight, it was very disturbing. The relationship that I had with Clive was one where I didn't question. If I did question certain things, and I'm not saying that this is an excuse, but if I did question certain things, I would be told that I wasn't cut up for the job, that I was cracking at the first sign of pressure, or that I was naive, or that if they probably made a mistake employing me. And I felt that I was being bullied, and I probably should have stood up more.
It sounds like emotional bullying to me. But I just want to go to then to page, the Cutting Edge Company. Just want to get clarity on something there. Seven of the employees were working at Megapark, and it's a sentence that states in 5.5.7, these employees would represent themselves as TMC employees. Now, you think that was like a certain sense, a misrepresentation of the actually working for TMC, although they were working for the Cutting Edge?
The employees themselves and the way that they conducted their work, I don't believe in any way that they misrepresented themselves in any way. When they were asked who were they employed with, those employees specifically would make it very clear that they work for Cutting Edge. What we did do for a consistency perspective, though, is that we did give, that represented themselves as TMC employees in the sense that they had Trillian email addresses, so there was a consistency. Our intention was to have lots of Trillian employees eventually, you know, been skilled up in working on this program, so we wanted consistency in the same way that McKinsey's got consistency, where all the employees have got McKinsey domain names. That was the intention. The employees that worked there never once said that they work for Trillian. They did say that they represent Trillian. But if asked, they would say that they work for Cutting Edge. When I had meetings with McKinsey specifically, it was very clear that the individual there, and I don't want to mention them by name, worked cutting edge, and it clearly had a subcontracting arrangement of sorts with them. That is the extent of it.
Just to highlight to me the cutting edge, what do you say is the main core business as cutting edge?
As described to me by Altak Emelin, cutting edge has got a proprietary software system that plugs into ERP databases and cleans things up. So their primary focus is procurement. They're specialists in procurement systems, and they're specialists in strategic sourcing. That's my understanding of their specialization.
Okay, then I just want to move to 3.10 that's now linked to the cutting edge. As there were two people, Courtney and Emily, that was the directors of cutting edge. And I just found this very interesting in 3.10.3 when he declined a meeting stating that he and Toby were busy with negotiations. And I link that now to the core business as you described, to purchase Tegeta. That was in a certain sense out of their line of business, I would say.
Absolutely. That conversation happened. It happened by a phone call in the morning. And I remember the meeting was supposed to be scheduled in Morningside, and Altus couldn't make it because specifically we were talking about claims and procurement for that specific meeting. They were very adamant that when we had those types of discussions that they wanted to be included. The meeting was actually drawn up specifically for them to start getting ships with the McKenzie team. Altus did send a representation for Cutting Edge to that meeting, but he wasn't there himself. Yes, it wasn't quite aligned to their formal scope of work.
Thank you very much.
Honorable Howell.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think the witness has been showered with assurance and blessings. But for myself, one of the pillars of the EFF is that we are fighting for an open society that is democratic and free of corruption. And on the basis of that pillar, which is pillar number 7, we commend you because it means we have more people in South Africa that can assist us in achieving that type of society we envisage. Thank you very much. And I want to start with, I think on your notes is 3.25, 3.26, and also link with 4.1. I think where there it indicates where you are assured of the inefficiencies of Mr. Wood, which amongst these, the ability to structure and operate the business. And that is where you were expected to augment that capacity. And I think that was one of the key roles you were expected to play there. And also, it says that on the 4.1, you were expected also to ramp up the business. Also, there is a part that talks about your role in terms of a human capital development. And I want to ask, because on 3.26, you also raise your anxiety that if I don't deliver, what is the plan B? Will I be fired? What will happen? I want to check, did you manage to deliver any of those 3 tasks that I've mentioned? There could be more. And whether your resignation was informed by the anxiety that you have shared on 3.26.
So from a human capital perspective, Trillion overnight on the 1st of March acquired about 50 people that transferred from regiments. So we went from having almost no one, well, two, to, you know, 50. And so between January and February, my CEO and I really were trying to prepare an environment to receive those individuals, because, you know, we just believe that, that suddenly having a new home when you didn't make the decision yourself would have been traumatic or would have been unsettling, and we were just really trying to build an environment where those individuals who decided to join Trillion would still be comfortable, that their career progression would still be secured. So I believe very much in what my CEO and I did. I had not worked that hard in my career within those 2 months. I think I would sleep on Fridays, and I would sort of sleep on Wednesdays. The rest of the time were effectively all-nighters and sleeping at most 1 or 2 hours. I really, really invested a lot, and I know that my CEO did the same in terms of trying to develop the human capital. We didn't, however, ramp up to the extent that we were expecting to ramp up, because we had the issues with the SDNL annexures. We had the relationship with McKinsey where there wasn't a plan. There was never a formalized plan in terms of how McKinsey would say we would reduce our headcount so that we could increase your headcount so that the transfer skills would happen. That never happened. So the headcount ramp up beyond the 50 was never planned and it was never executed. Regardless, I had left then. So I can't comment beyond that. My resignation was informed particularly for the reasons that I stated for what happened during that week, which was the information about the finance minister. It was the disempowerment towards actually having any type of discussions about remuneration, especially for myself and my CEO, considering our financial position was worse, and then demonstrating the disempowerment through the Bank of Baroda. Those are my anxieties. I didn't have any anxiety towards my ability to manage and build a company, because I had done it before. I had done it at Sonest, I had done it at Woolley Parsons, I did it at ISS as well. So I know what I can do, and I could have done this, but the environment was not such that it could be done.
I was just following up on that. Given that environment and the constraints it presented to you, do you think your appointment was genuine? There was a genuine commitment to it, or it was just an arrangement for you to boost the BE score of the company? I'm raising this without casting any aspersion to your competencies.
It's my opinion that I was not employed for my competencies.
Speak to the mic. Sorry, Chair. 3.28, 3.29, I think it was raised probably when I left because it was important. You have indicated that you were asked to sign some documents as a CEO, and then later on you realized that the same signature was then used on invoices. Now, what did you do with it? Because one would think that if your signature is used without your consent, that should be a wake-up call of a corrupt activity. Can you tell us, was there any action that you took? Because I see that it was done around, the signature that you did was around 10 February, if I'm correct. But I just want to check, because it is an indication of a corrupt activity. What did you do? Because it's not clear on the evidence.
The extent to which I raised the concern was to an email once to Clive, where I literally just stated that I saw the letter for the first time with my signature on it. And I didn't. In hindsight, I should have questioned it more. In hindsight, I should have. My signature was not put on invoices. You've seen the invoice. There's no place for signature, right? So the statement is somewhat incorrect. My signature was used on cover notes for invoices, right? All the invoices, even the appendices and the annexures to Jeff Budlender's report, there are no signatures on that except for whoever processed them. Certainly not from Trillium, but the cover letters do include that signature. So at that time, the only one that I was aware of was the letter to Anantra. There were two. It was the letter to Anantra, and it was the letter about Mohammed Bobet.
And I, for the Mohammed Bobed one, that email went out and, or the letter was created when I wasn't there. I also found out about it later. And I, to be completely honest with you, I probably should have escalated it more, and I probably should have kicked and screamed more. But the content of the two letters was, yeah. That.
I thought you had more. Okay, on 3.5, under Mr. Eric Wood, you have indicated that TMC, for some reason, inherited 50 employees from Regimen. What was the terms of reference of the transfer or inherited those employees?
My understanding is that those employees transferred under Section 197. Yeah, 197 of the Labor Relations Act.
So, was the company Regiment transferring on the basis of a liquidation process or becoming insolvent, or it was just a generosity gesture of transferring skilled employees to TMC?
I have absolutely no idea. I do not know what the mechanisms and what decisions will be made on Regiment's side. I know the people at Regiment, but I don't know any of the decisions or the terms of reference for the decisions in that organization.
Okay, on 3.7, I think it's under Ashok Narayan. A subcontracted company, which is eGateway, they ask you pertinent issues relating to finances, and you could not provide them with an answer. As a CEO, how did that make you feel? Because obviously they were asking you as an authority on the basis of the position you were leading.
I felt incredibly disempowered, and this also then talks to the fact of the Bank of Baroda in terms of what, how contradictory it was, because if I was disempowered to not have any sight, any management control over finances, why was I requested to open a bank account? The people who had control over the finances and the people that operated the finances should have been the people that opened the bank account, yet that wasn't the case.
Okay. On the same paragraph, it indicates below that Amabungane published that Mr. Naraya was at the center of money laundering. Was there any action taken by TMC, or it continued to associate itself with him despite the publish?
By then, I had been away from Trillion for a very long time. So that article was published on the 8th of December, and I had resigned on the 19th of March that year. Very deliberately on my side, I broke ties with Trillion and obviously wasn't involved.
On your statement, I think it's 3.17, if I'm correct, I think so. You were introduced to Mr. Mapengwana, and Mr. Mapengwana was said to be the main contact from the executives in ESCOM. Now, was it a special arrangement, or was it by designation of his post? Was it a special arrangement specifically for TMC, or was it because of his, it's a, is a designation with all other companies that are relating with ESCOM?
I don't know. I can tell you from my interactions with Mr. Sorry, we're talking about Mr. Mavilani? Is that correct? Okay. Yeah. I don't know if Edward Mavilani had that relationship with his other supplier development people or the other suppliers of ESCOM. I don't know. But the times when I would meet Mr. Mabalani, there wouldn't be other suppliers there. I would meet with him in the time that we had agreed, for the meeting that we had agreed, and we would speak about the things that are pertinent to or related to Trillion at least. I cannot comment at all whether it was special, whether he had it with anybody else, but I know that we had a relationship with him. And, okay. And Coco obviously introduced me to Edwin, saying that Edwin would support you, and that's what he did.
Okay, talking about Mr. Coco, on 3.18, you are expressing a frustration there that you ended up with strained relations because you felt that some of the decisions did not include TMC. Take us through in detail the frustration. Because you even give an expression that at some point you had a feeling that TMC was a baggage to Mackenzie, and they also indicate if it was ever resolved. Thank you.
So I was introduced to Mackenzie for the first time in December of the previous year, which is 2015. By the time we started getting into the details of how the work was going to be executed at ESKOM, the work plan was already established. The quality measures were already established. The resources required to execute on the work was already established. Timelines, schedules, deliverable dates, what was going to execute the cash flow triggers, all established. So I get in there and I think I've got something to add, right? Especially on the mining side. I mean, I just come from Anglo American. I wanted to contribute. I didn't have a team yet that could all equally contribute, but I wanted to at least contribute because I knew that I could. My CIO joined. He wanted to contribute because he is highly competent, and we were just excluded. So we were not. When I pushed to influence quality processes, when I pushed to question the delivery methodology schedules, when I push for any of the typical things that you have in a management consultant role, I was told, but we Mackenzie. So, but the time I left, no. That relationship had not been completely restored. And Trillian was still on the sideline. We had to get Mackenzie to do the final interview for all people that we wanted to acquire. So Trillian couldn't go outsource and actually start building the HR competency because Mackenzie had to be the final word on the people that we would actually eventually give employment contracts to. If we didn't do that, they wouldn't accept the people on the work stream. So when we did get those people, they went through all our final processes, Mackenzie would say, well, this person's not good enough for these reasons, and we couldn't move forward.
The other frustration you're expressing here on 4.64 was also on the negotiation with subcontractors. You see, you sign contracts, but you have never seen the subcontractors. Would you perhaps agree with me that these subcontractors, these companies that were subcontractors, which you never see, were actually bogus or ghost subcontractors?
The subcontractors agreement with eGateway did exist. I signed that subcontractors agreement. So that did exist and was signed, I think, sometime in February, I think. The subcontractors agreement were Cutting Edge, and those are the only two subcontractors that I'm aware of. The subcontractors were Cutting Edge I'd never seen. I certainly didn't sign it. When I asked Clive about it, Clive said that it had been handled. So I can't agree completely because there was a contract that existed between Trillian Management Consulting and eGateway, but not one for Cutting Edge that I'd seen.
I think this is my second last point, Chair. Yes, it's my second last point. You, on 8.7, I think up to 8.11, that's where you're telling us about the meeting with the Minister of COCTA, Mr. Van Rooyen. Now, my interest, if you can, because you're also telling us that you were actually requested, in fact, all of you were actually requested to observe protocol. Now, I want you to take us through. Give us a description of that protocol. You must tell us, what was Mr. Van Rooyen? Because we need to know if we're talking about the same Mr. Van Rooyen that was appointed as a minister for 7 days, for a weekend, and then removed. So we must know that. Give us the description. What was Mr. Van Rooyen wearing? The color of his shoe, of the clothes he was wearing, whether it was formal or casual. Also, we want to know, if you can just explain briefly, the seating arrangement, the place of the meeting, where was it? If you know the address, please tell us the time of the meeting, when was it convened, and how long did it last? Who was in the meeting? And then if you can cover that point, because you submitted a proposal, and you yourself, you are saying that at that time we asked to give a proposal when we knew that we did not have any skills, we did not have any profile, but you were asked to be creative. I've just looked at this, I think it's a 3-page or 5-page something, and please tell us, how did you develop it? You see, did you go to Google it? And because I see he was impressed for some reason. And yet you say that there was no profile, the company did not have any competency, but the man laughed and said, I am impressed. Please tell us. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, she's still going to respond.
I'm going to try my best. Minister Van Rooyen was dressed very formally, as was Mr. Bulbert and Ian Woodley. If I remember correctly, and this is one thing I do remember very oddly, but I remember what people wear. He was wearing a navy blue suit and brown shoes with a white shirt. For some reason, that's something that I always remember. The meeting was at the MISA offices in Pretoria. I don't know the exact street location. The time scheduled originally, I think, was about 3:30, but the minister was running late, so the meeting really only commenced at about 4:30 and lasted for roughly an hour, because I remember driving home at just after 5, so roughly, no, not after 5, after half past 5, so the meeting was roughly an hour. The seating arrangements was a circular boardroom. It looked like it was more like a VC, because there were big screens on the side. On the one side was a bit like a U. On the one side was Mr. Bobet and Ian. The head of the table was Mr. Van Rooyen, or Minister Van Rooyen. Then, I don't remember, I was sitting here, so it was Eric, myself, and the two Oliver Wyman directors. So that was the setup, and that was the logistics. The minister was somewhat impressed by the five-slider. I suspect that you've got the five-slider or four-slider presentation, which was me just trying to make up a business profile for the organization. I did that together with Eric Wood the previous day, and we met in regiments, and I was introduced to the Oliver Wyman directors directly. That was in the morning of when we met Gary Peter. I went through and I made up the competencies. With all due respect to all management consultants out there, there is an ambiguous way that you can actually try and articulate what you will do. And I learned that being a management consultant myself. So I didn't Google that. I did try and compile it based on what I believed we would do, so it was still ambiguous. That was not the proposal. The compilation of the proposal only commenced post that meeting. I don't know that the proposal was ever submitted to the minister, but the compilation of it certainly was happening between Oliver Wyman, Trillian, and Mohammed Boba.
Chair, I'm sitting down now. This is my last one. You're also saying on 8.11, there was an unsolicited proposal which was prepared by COCTA as informed by the information that was sent by Mr. Bobart. Please explain, because my simple understanding of English, this suggests that the draft was done by Mr. Bobart, who is working for COCTA, giving it to TMC to present it as a document of TMC so that TMC can use it to trade with the COCTA. So please explain to me, because you said you find it in your desk. It was in a white envelope, you looked at it. It was exactly what COCTA is looking at. So basically you were given a document by Mr. Bobart, who's an employee of COCTA, for TMC to present it to COCTA. Please, confirm my suspicions.
Unfortunately, the articulation of the specific points is not 100% correct, so please may I indulge me to explain what I meant exactly by 8.11. There was one proposal that was being compiled for COCTA. There was a single proposal, there weren't multiple proposals. There was one proposal. The proposal commenced compilation very shortly after the meeting with the minister. The proposal was being compiled by Trillian and Oliver Wyman, with Mohammed giving information to ensure that the proposal would be successful. There was one proposal. The information that Mohammed provided was either through email threads, which are annexed to the statement, or via these white envelopes that I would find on my desk. So one of the white envelopes was the back to basics information that informed the unsolicited proposal because it spoke to the scope that the proposal should be addressing. So that was just an example of the white envelopes. It's not that he drafted the proposal and gave it to us. However, there was an email thread that does form part of the annexures to the statement where Mohammed did inform me in terms of timeline. He did phone me once and give me a view in terms of what the expected budget would be. So there was a lot of pertinent information to inform the scope of what the proposal should be. That is unsolicited in the sense that there was no RFP or there was no formal communication. There was no tender to say this is, you know, we need this work, do it. No, we met with the minister 2 days after we started compiling this proposal that was going to be sent him.
Thank you very much. I'm making this point to say there's a basic, back to basic program that is advanced at the level of municipality. And now to say that program, which was said to have been submitted by TMC to COGTA, and it's exactly what the minister has made reference to. So it was developed by the very same employees of COGTA and then passage through a consultant as if it's an original document of the
your
consultant.
Assumption.
I'm making this point.
Alright. Alright. Honorable Seji.
Thanks. Two issues that I need to be clarified on, and in the interest of time, maybe I will have to raise all of them at once so that we are able to deal with this thing. But I'm happy that you managed to call Honorable Kaula to order, because I think we have not yet reached the stage of making assumptions and conclusions with regard to the process that we are involved in. We are in the process of putting together information at the correct time. We'll be able to determine the way forward. The when you resigned from TMS, you indicated that you were misled about the objective of TMC. And my question would be, how would you describe the objective of the company as compared to the one that you knew when you joined the company, having said everything that you have said so far? The last one, I think it's 4.7, you are talking about you being instructed to open you are a CEO, you are instructed to open a bank account, you are not a signatory, or you don't even have access to the account. Upon your investigation, who happened to be signatories of that account? Because in your position, surely you should have been one of the people who were supposed to be a signatory. But having been instructed to open, you have rightfully indicated that you didn't have access to the account. I would appreciate if you have information to know who are the people who were signatories to that account. Just those two issues.
Thank you. I'm going to start with the second part of the question, if that's okay. I opened the APSA account for Trillium Management Consulting, but Mark Chipkin transacted on it. So my understanding is that Mark Chipkin was at least one of the signatories. But I opened the account, but I did not transact, and I didn't have any transacting details either. I never got a profile number for internet banking. Nothing. As far as the Bank of Baroda is concerned, my last interaction with the Bank of Baroda is that the two signatories on that account should have, in both instances and in simultaneous action, been myself and Mark Chipkin. I got emails confirming after my resignation that I had been removed, but I did not see any communication in terms of who became the new signatories. So by the time I opened it, it was supposed to be Mark and I. By the time I left, I don't know. And likewise for APSA. Sorry, I just need to be reminded of the first part of the question. Okay.
With regards to the first part of the question, if I draw a comparison between what I thought the initial objectives were of the organization versus what my perception is of the organization now, with respect, I think I've been asked that question prior, and I'm very concerned to raise my opinion towards what Trillion's objective is right now. But I can tell you what I believe the objective to be at the onset of me joining the organization. When I initially joined the organization, I believed that they were trying to establish a proudly South African, black-owned management consulting company that would compete with the likes of McKinsey and Letema. I believed that. By the time that I resigned, my opinion is that that was a lie.
Thank you very much, honorable members. You're done?
No, yes. I'm done.
Okay, thank you very much, honorable members. And thank you very much, Ms. Goodson. I just want to thank you on behalf of the committee. You were very brave to come to the committee.
More than 95.
Sorry, my apologies for that. I want to thank you for your braveness, intelligence to come and testify in our committee and gave us this crucial information. I want to thank you more because you are a woman. It is surprising the power and the braveness the women have, especially you and Ms. Mutebo, under the circumstances that you are facing today. You were given golden opportunities, very rare opportunities for women to get. Those positions that you got were always given to men. But it happened that you were given those opportunities. But you did not misuse your professionalism as a well-educated woman. Women are meant to feed the whole nation. But there are days that women are being used by men because of, it's unfortunate because really, all the people that you mention here are Mr. It is unfortunate. That is why I'm saying there are days that women are being abused by men. As a result, they end up doing wrong things and get entangled into wrong things, accepting all what men are saying. You were given this opportunity, and if maybe that opportunity fell to some other hands, because of hunger, people would have used that opportunity to their satisfaction, or a woman would have looked at the family, look at the children, and look at his own household, that there is nothing, there is no food, there is nothing in the house. Therefore, this opportunity, I'm going to use it, whether it's wrong or it's right. But you did exceptionally well, because you take a resolution that you must resign so that you don't get yourself involved in such such issues. The opportunities that our government is opening outside there, we always cry as women in saying we want 50% of women to be representative of companies, 50% to be in government. But when we get there, we get abused as women. It is unfortunate that it happens here in South Africa. Thank you very much for your braveness. I want to apologize to men who are not doing that, but in majority they are doing that. Thank you very much, and stay strong. And stay strong, as Mr. Swart has said, you are protected. We won't give you 100% protection, not even 30% of protection, but because we are believers of the word, we think that Lord will protect you right through all your endeavors will come through. Everything that you wanted to do in life, you are very young, you are 30 something years old. 37 years old, I'm told, is you are in your tender age of becoming a middle life woman, but you got yourself in such a position. But I am telling you now that you have spoken out, I wish every person, every woman can take the braveness that you have taken. The meeting stands adjourned because I want to speak about women too much. When I speak about women, I want to preach for the whole day. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much for coming.